came from outer space to fill the world with terror, to bring you unforgettable suspense.
It's indestructible. It's indescribable. Nothing can stop it.
Shock Tales with Johnny Thunder.
Just named Slime Magazine's Man of the Year. It's your master of ceremonies, Johnny Thunder.
How are you, genius? Christ, it's been months. I haven't talked to you in how many months? You don't call. You don't write.
Actually, I did. I think you blocked all my emails and you absolutely deleted my contacts. And you were taking your time off very seriously.
It's funny. I said to my wife earlier, I'm like, wow, I haven't talked to Chris in a couple months. And she's like, oh, why? I go, well, he's called me like 3 or 4 times. He texted me, he called, and I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I just saw this the next day. But I literally did. I'm very busy. I'm so consumed with the world of Johnny Thunder.
Yeah, I had to call you publicist to try to even line this up, which was ridiculous.
I know. Well, listen, you know what? Hey, look, I'm not cheap anymore. Who am I kidding? Of course I'm cheap.
You're not cheap. You work for free.
So exactly.
It's a difference.
I know. I try thinking and nothing happens. You know, we should probably say, you know, where we are and what's going on. We are back.
Where are we?
We're at the last bar on the left, dude.
Oh, geez.
And we are serving up Shock Tales this month. Woo. My Drunken Lunacy is brought to you by Trogues Mad Effin' Elf. And what kind of made up bullshit do you have, Sparkles?
Oh, dude, I actually was at
Oh, something real?
Dude, no, I was actually at Flynn's Irish Pub last Thursday, had Trogues Mad Elf on tap.
Sweet!
And I actually slammed a few.
Yeah, how'd you do? Good?
Dude,
right?
Oh yeah! After a couple, I bit some guy in the ankle and I punched him in the balls.
Wow! Congratulations! And that's what led to the pipes cleaning out.
That was the evening.
I was just gonna say that's your foreplay, ankle biting and
dude, that was
killer
biting. She was like, I'm taking this guy home.
You are my kind of man, sir. Follow me. Well, Sparkles, what are you drinking tonight?
Oh, shit. I'm actually not even drinking any f***ing ridiculous beverage, like foolish beverage I got off of bumwines.com. This is actually, I'm drinking Harpoon's Winter Warmer. Tip your glass. It's a 12-ounce liquid Christmas party in your mouth. Winter Warmer.
Good Lord, of all times to run out of oxys. Hey, everybody, as we said, we're back here, and welcome to Shock Tales. First up, dude, I want to give a couple scream outs to a couple putrid prints that I dug this past month. The first is We Are Going to Eat You by Stephen Bissett. It's $25. It's self-published. It's 336 pages. Now, comic geeks out there like myself know Bissett from his classic run with Alan Moore in the 1980s on Swamp Thing. This is a book all about the Italian cannibal subgenre in horror. But what's awesome about this book is that it's not only just about that, you know, the 70s through the early 80s of when the Italians did all those flicks. He talks about early jungle action picks up through the Mondo era and kind of connects the history of where those Italian filmmakers got their ideas, got the impetus for the exploitation flicks that they did in the 70s and 80s. And I really, really dug this. And like I said, it's self-published and it really deserves a wider publication than it has. But if you're at all into this, I'm going to post the link. Go check it out. It's a great book. It's a wonderful resource, illustrated, well-researched, well-written. And I definitely would recommend it to anyone that wants to investigate this area of horror a little bit more. The other book was, hey Chris, speaking of your date last week, Crab Monsters. Crab Monsters, Teenage Cavemen and Candy Stripe Nurses by Chris Nashawadi. Say that again.
Nashawadi.
List for $35. It's on Amazon for $21, about 272 pages. Now, this cat is a senior writer at Entertainment Weekly, and the book obviously is about one of the most influential independent producers, directors, and writers, the king of the B-movie, Roger Corman. And what's nice about the book is it's told by Corman himself, as well as some of the cast that got their start in his films, like James Cameron, Francis Ford Coppola, Martin Scorsese. And it talks about the history of his films. There's a bunch of interviews, there's pictures, there's behind-the-scenes bullshit, there's critical essays. So if you're a Corman fan, I think you would really dig this, so go check it out. Now, speaking of Corman, there's a new DVD collection called, cleverly enough, Roger Corman's Horror Classics from Film Chest. Now, this 3-DVD set has The Terror, Dementia 13, and A Bucket of Blood. Now, these, of course, are all classic Corman flicks, and they're available, you know, dollar store, you know, bins. They're cheap public domain, I think a lot of times. But these are restored from the original 35mm prints. They're really nice presentation. It's nice packaging. And again, these are the films with Francis Ford Coppola, Jack Nicholson, you have Dick Miller, Boris Karloff, and it's a nice collection for anyone who loves classic horror. Bucket of Blood is one of my favorite guilty pleasures. I don't know if you've probably seen that flick, right?
When I was a kid, it's been a long time.
Okay, yeah. I mean, it was just on TCM this year, and like I said, it's just a real fun flick. I mean, Corman's flicks are wonderful, so I think that is something that would definitely be of interest to everyone out there. Now, another restored DVD that's out from the same company is The Bat with Vincent Price and Agnes Moorehead. And again, this isn't necessarily straightforward horror. It's a little bit more of a thriller, suspense, haunted house kind of flick, mystery. But again, a fun film. This version's been restored by Film Chest. It's actually one of my favorite films, I think, from the 50s. So if you're into the film, this is a great version. You want to go check it out. Again, I will post the link. Now, dude, TerrorVision-wise, you know, we've talked about this for a couple months now. It seems like TV is the new place for horror. You know what I mean? I mean, with The Walking Dead, American Horror Story, Bates Motel, Supernatural, Sleepy Hollow, Dracula. I mean, think about all the horror that's on TV right now. It's cool in a way. But also what I said to you, I think there's a lot of stuff that I'm not necessarily into, but I think it's a good thing for the genre.
Yeah, you never got around to watching any of those Bates Motel ones, did you?
I did. I watched the first couple. I just wasn't into it.
That's right. You said it was like the teen angst shit kind of thing.
I just didn't.
Watched the first one, and I was just not that excited to keep watching. But, I didn't hate it, but I was not excited to continue.
It just wasn't enough for me to go back, like I said, dude. But I'm digging. NBC, I think, has the Dracula show. Well, now apparently they've greenlit. They're going to do a pilot of The Wolfman based on the remake from a couple years ago. The CW, which has a lot of genre stuff, you know, including, like I said, Supernatural. They do Arrow. They're doing The Flash coming up. They're going to do Our Man. They are also ordering a pilot. I mean, one of my favorite shows from the 80s growing up, Tales from the Dark Side. You remember that growing up?
Yeah.
That was, I love that show. I love anthologies. Loved that. I mean, the opening was creepy. Remember with the negative and the over, you know, the voiceover. Well, they're calling it a revamp of the show, and it's going to still be an anthology, but not necessarily a week-to-week anthology. They're looking to sort of bring some different short stories to air, and maybe have a little bit of an arc, or you know, have some continuing episodes, not necessarily self-contained episodes. And the cat behind this is Joe Hill, who has done like Heart-Shaped Box, Lock and Key, and who also is Stephen King's son. So there's a little bit of a, you know,
a little nepotism going.
And also talent in the family. I mean, he can't blame the cat, you know, for following if that's what he really digs. So he said, you know, it's going to be called Dark Side, and it's really a reinvention, not a reboot. So as I said, they're going to try a little bit of a different approach, where it's still going to be an anthology in the sense of there's going to be continuing stories in different settings, different actors, and they're trying to bring in the best talent to write. So I'm looking forward to it. I hope it gets greenlit, because I love that type of stuff on the air. So again, we'll see. And now, tying in, like I said, because the CW has been doing a lot of DC stuff, they've also greenlit a pilot for iZombie. Do you remember we talked about this a long time ago? This was the Vertigo comic.
Way back.
Yeah. Wait.
Way back.
The Vertigo comic book. I mean, iZombie was so freaking awesome. Chris Roberson and Mike Allred. It was about that hot chick, Gwen, who was a zombie. And every time she has to eat brains to survive. So every time she eats a brain, she actually gains the memories of the person whose brain she just consumed. And it would, continue her on her little adventures and so forth. She had a ghost as a friend. She had a were-terrier as a friend. She met a mummy. There was a Cthulhu. It was all kinds of craziness. Well, their version is going to be a little bit different. The CW version seems to be a supernatural crime procedural, so it's almost like CSI zombie, where a med student turns zombie, takes his job in the coroner's office, and every week she basically eats a brain and then solves a crime. So I don't think it's necessarily going to be as cool as the comic book.
That sounds freaking horrible.
Yeah, it does, and the comic book was awesome, because again, Gwen was just effing hot. For a comic book chick,
she's the hottest fucking zombie I've ever seen.
Dude, she is like my comic book girlfriend, even though she's dead. But that's cool. They're all pink inside. All right, hey, guess what?
Hey,
did you know that The Walking Dead just had its mid-season finale?
Did it?
Yeah. So, dude, Walking Dead just wrapped up its mid-season finale for what is it? Season 4? And we're still stuck in the prison.
No, we're actually out of the prison finally.
Well, so. In the finale, but you know what? Yeah. So you had said, "Hey, let's toss this out there." What would have been your impressions? Of the season so far?
It was a little slow. I had already been kind of past the prison. I was hoping that we would have had the mid-season finale. I was hoping that that was what happened back at the end of last season.
Hey,
wait a minute.
Did you look at my notes? Did you look at my notes? No, bastard.
Dude, I'm probably only saying things that you had told me like 6 months ago, and I'm just, once again, you know how I am. I think I come up with these ideas on my own, and then it's like, oh yeah, that's right, you told me that.
For four and a half years, I'm used to it.
They should have had the big climactic ending then when they went back into the prison at the end of last season. It was like, well, why are we doing? Did we wrap this shit up? And then they got in. I understand the whole kind of disease concept that they were pursuing for the first number of episodes. It was just getting a little too drawn out. It was like, come on, can we pick up the tempo? I don't need to see a zombie Bukkake, killing Bukkake every episode either. But it just seemed like there wasn't a lot really happening with even any characters. As soon as somebody got brought in, there really was no character development. They were just killed off. They brought somebody in, and they were immediately killed off.
Thank you.
I don't know. Did I just blow your load, or is that what
you...
Why are we talking to me? I'm an idiot. I don't know anything about this show. What do you think?
No. Shockingly, I think I'll have to say I have to agree with you.
Say what?
I wasn't necessarily pleased with the way they handled the prison storyline last year. I thought the whole... Now, look, there's two viewpoints. The fact that the governor and the prison storyline, the governor in the comic book is there's a lot of criticism you can look at and go, he's almost like Snidely Whiplash, where it's like, he's like has Lori tied to the train tracks, and that governor's
he looked a little bit like him, actually.
Yeah, and he's like twirling his mustache and he's raping Michonne while the train's coming and Rick's trying to stop him in his Dudley Do-Hat cap. So I understand for the purposes of television, maybe you need to humanize the character. Maybe you need to flesh it out. Maybe you do need this bastardization where you have Andrea becoming a love interest. That was not the direction in which I wanted to see the story go last year. It wasn't the storyline that I would have perhaps done last year. I always said that I thought the prison storyline was too big for one season. Simultaneously, now that we have gone to a second half of a season with it, I felt that it was just sort of, the first half of this season to me, and again, I think you and I are perhaps contrary to a lot of people that I've seen posting, was sort of like, 3.5, a little bit more of the same, and I get it, you're trying to do little things here and there, but You know, you're introducing a lot of threads that I do hope they close up later. You know, you have the feeding at the fence. You have, you know, the red-eyed zombies. You have the issue with the water. You have the murders. You know, you have all these things going on. I hope they pick that up later. You know, I hope they're going to, you know, mirror a little bit more of what Kirkman, you know, himself did in the comic in terms of those storylines. I was finally glad to see the Battle of the Prison. Because last year it was so just friggin' weak. You know, sacrificing Herschel at that moment, you know, maybe, you know, you would say, well, you know, he's going to do that to, you know, tug at the heartstrings of Rick, necessarily not Michonne, because he wants to keep Michonne to torture her. But I really thought they should have delved more into making the governor as evil and just as awful as he is in the comic book. And I sound dead inside when I say that I don't find the TV governor that deviant. I don't find him as much as, you know, the psychopath as he is in the comic books. They've given him these rationalizations. And I know there's, you know, the prequels that Kirkman's done, you know, the road to the, you know, there's novels and so forth. So, you know, if you're out there and you're going to blast me, fuck you. I'm just saying in terms of the comic, it's just too much of, as you said, all of a sudden, you know, you're kind of lurching along with this sickness storyline, which really didn't interest me because, frankly, the prison looks cold and dark and ugly. I don't know, sleep outside. You know, you have a safe perimeter. I know, go sit in the warmth. Don't be in these cold, disgusting cell blocks. And then all of a sudden, like you had said, the show just, like the needle comes off the record. And all of a sudden, we're going back in time to see what the governor's been doing for a couple of months. Well, you know what? I really don't care. So I don't know. Like I said, I have mixed feelings about last season. I have mixed feelings about this season. I think there's been good episodes. I think there have been good parts. But honestly, I've always been one that said I don't mind the character development. I don't mind the dialogue. I don't mind the small episodes. But I have to say, this season so far, my favorite episode has been the blowout of the prison. Because now, like you had said, Rick and Carl now are on the road.
Yeah.
They're going to run into the cannibals. Eventually, they're going to run into Michonne. We're on the road to Alexandria. You know, like you had said, when Daryl heard that message in the car, is that Eugene? Is that Abraham? Because we know they're being introduced later in the season. We're moving to Alexandria, which I cannot friggin' wait for. So I think we're on the right path. I just think that I'll have to say I'm glad we're out of the prison. So that's pretty much it.
Moving on.
Let's go to the Silver Scream. Some new releases coming. The first one, January 3rd, Paranormal Activity, The Marked Ones, written and directed by Christopher Landon, who was involved with parts 2 and 3. The plot goes, after being marked, Jesse begins to be pursued by mysterious forces while his family and friends try to save him. I'm not into this at all, so this is another film I cannot wait to miss. I don't really care. I think the trailer looks shitty. I know people like these, but I just don't care. So, whatever.
Next.
Yes?
Next!
January 17th, Devil's Due. Now, this is from some of the directors who did one of the segments in the original VHS. It's another found footage flick. This one, it's about these this newlywed couple who's on their honeymoon, right? And they wake up, and apparently they've missed a day or two, and they can't remember anything. Welcome to the club. And then the chick finds out
they have one of Scully's patented roofie coladas.
Exactly. It's the Chris Baker I hooked up last Thursday trick.
We were drinking RPAs all night.
So
roofie pale ales.
I can't get pregnant. It's in my butthole. So, like, the husband goes out and he buys a camcorder and he's, like, trying to record everything for posterity. Easy for me to say. And then the husband begins to notice odd behavior in his wife and there's dark changes going on. So it's like she's, like, pregnant with the devil's baby and I don't know what's going on. So if you want to check that out, check that out. And then something else that I think looks craptastic is I, Frankenstein. On January 24th, this is starring Aaron Eckhart. Again, nerds will know him as Two-Face and Harvey Dent from The Dark Knight. Rated PG-13 for intense fantasy action. Now, again, my idea of fantasy action and their idea of fantasy action is friggin' different. But anyway, Frankenstein's creature finds himself caught in an all-out centuries-old war between immortal clans. What I hate about this is if you've seen the trailer – again, to me, it's like that underworld nonsense. And I think one of the guys behind the script was involved with underworld. I don't like action nonsense, jumping around, video game bullshit with sort of a horror bent. It just looks ridiculous. I don't know if you watched this trailer. It made me angry. It's really not a traditional Frankenstein, which is fine.
Did you punch your monitor? Were you punching your fucking monitor?
I punched your mom.
She's a bitch. She probably
deserved it.
She just fucking.
Yeah, I don't care, and I know a lot of people are excited about this. So again, if you dig it, go see it and tell me how it is, because I have no intention of going to see it, but. Anyway, hey, let's close out this bitch, dude. You ready?
Yeah, let's do this.
All right, we got two reviews. The first one is 13-13-13.
Leap year was supposed to add an entirely new month. Today is 13-13-13.
I need to go save my daughter.
It's not safe.
From James Sack. He's the writer and director. Remember from that exploitation flick we talked about a few months ago, Hate Crime?
Yeah.
About meth-addled neo-Nazis who attack and rape and kill the Jewish family.
Yeah.
So this one's about, like, the idea that the Mayan calendar is still in place. Remember we had the whole, you know, dire prophecies about the end of the world with the Mayan calendar? Well, they're saying this. The idea is that there were 13 months under the Mayans, and leap year accounts for this, and leap year is actually 13, the date, the 13th month, 13th day, 13th year. And on that day, everyone except those people who were born on a leap year basically go ape shit. So everyone basically in the world goes crazy and tries to kill each other, and it's just madness and it's mayhem, sort of like George Romero's The Crazies. And you have people who are born on leap year are sane, and it's about their struggle to try to, like, save the people that they love and not get murdered by basically a whole world gone insane. I saw this, and I have to say I like the fact that Bresic did something a little bit different here. You know, it's not a found footage film. It's actually directed. I thought it was a good idea. I thought there were some good scenes. I guess my biggest problem with it was the acting. I thought was a little over the top, a little amateurish.
It was like JV Drama Club. It was... I didn't get through about half the movie, and I finally just go, I can't watch any more of this fucking shit. I got that far. I was like, I actually liked the black guy, the lead guy. I thought he was probably the best out of all of the actors in the entire thing. Therefore, he was the lead, but. Like watching those two numbskulls laughing at each other while they stab, stabs the fat guy in the chest. He's like laughing at it. It got to a point where I was just like, all right, enough of this shit. And then they're trying to get out of the hospital for like 20 minutes. It's like,
I was going to say, that's where it really bogged down.
And then I couldn't handle it anymore.
I would say I really, really dug though the first half sort of where it slowly build. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, where you're not sure what's going on. Like, the little girl is in the driveway, and then things just sort of, you realize that things are completely wrong. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like, I thought there was a good idea there. I don't know whether it was actually fully executed, in which I would say
no, it wasn't.
and as I've also said,
I'm not usually overly critical, but it was not.
No, but I also said some of those same cats. The one guy, the big guy in the garage. I don't know if you got that far. And the one guy in the house with the fat guy and the other guy in the house were from Hate Crime. And I think they're, you know, sort of the loud screaming, overacting, suited, you know, meth out neo-Nazis. I don't know whether it really was, you know, suitable here. So overall, you know, should you rent it? Probably not.
No.
But I think this cat's a director that, you know, I'm hoping to see more from. So I'm trying to put a positive spin this month, Mr. Grumpy.
Negative Grumpy Nancy. All right. And what else do we have?
Oh, dude, but
you're lucky because I didn't see the next one.
Oh, but I was going to say Bad Milo.
What is it?
You got a thing in your butt.
This creature comes out and attacks that someone. This thing is a part of you.
What are you talking about?
It's a metaphor.
This is the furthest thing from a metaphor.
Dude, again, horror comedy. You know, I'm always railing against it. I'm always bitching about it. But, dude, I really dug this movie. I had a great time watching this. Again, I hope it wasn't the oxys that I was on, but I thought it was great.
Did you get the 40s? The OC 40s?
No. Oh my God, it was way less than that, but it went down good with some Merlot.
Good, my friend's a rehab from the OC 40s.
Oh, congratulations.
Probably didn't need those. No. Those are the ones where you're if your legs get caught in a tractor turbine or something like that, they give you the OC 40s.
No. I only had like 5 milligram ones, and I'm like, and the nurse was like, you're kind of, I go, fat.
Say it. You can say, just say it.
Well, you're a little bit, I go, fat. Anyway, Bad Milo. We had talked about this last time. Remember, this is the movie about the cat who's like having these stomach problems. He doesn't know what's going on. And his stress is like leading to all these emotional problems, these physical problems. And basically, he poops out this undeveloped monster twin. And then everybody that he gets pissed off at work or in life, the monster comes out of his ass and then runs away and kills them and then crawls back up his ass. It sounds completely ridiculous, and it is such a throwback to old school 80s, like Ghoulies, Critters, Gremlins, with a little bit of a Basket Case. Basket Case. Dude, the monster looks like Basket Case, but it reminds you of, like I said, Critters and Ghoulies and Gremlins, and it's actually funny. Because I was like, I don't know what to go into this. The lead actor, Ken Marino, hilarious. He does a great job. He's understated. He's likable. He's hilarious. Patrick Warburton is also in it. Remember from Seinfeld?
Yeah.
Putty's
dude,
in it.
He's in everything. He's the voiceover master right now.
Yeah. He's hysterical. He's this cat's boss. The mother-in-law's hysterical. There's a therapist. There's the wife. It's this convoluted sort of family, kind of almost like a sitcom film with this monster coming out of this cat's ass. It's funny. I had a great time with it. So I think that for me, again, it's very rare where a horror comedy works. But if you're looking for something, don't look for it to be the greatest movie you've ever seen. It's not serious. It's not the best thing you're going to see all year, but it's worth the money. It's worth your time. And I think it's a lot of fun. You know, it drags a little bit, I would say, towards the middle. The beginning starts strong, and the middle drags a little bit, and then the ending's very strong and funny and action-packed. But I really had a good time with it, and I'm glad I watched it. So this month, I would say, for your money, check out Bad Milo. And with that, genius, sad to say, take a breath, take a drink. Okay, we are done.
I'm going now. Heaven help you.
Please like and follow the podcast. Stalk us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Links in the description. And help us by sharing HauntCast with all your Haunt and Halloween brethren. Until next time, stay scary.